and keep the seven commands of Noah. And besides, it's a very difficult process, and we're not exactly trying to convert humanity. No. Stay the way you are. You have your own fulfillment, and teach other Gentiles to keep the seven commands of Noah. And so basically, he told me, I'm an old man, and for me to change my habits, it's very difficult, and I live my life. So I decided to stay in that way. But why exactly am I teaching at the university? I'm not acting a missionary there. When Jewish people come to study, then I usually try to avoid them from coming to my courses. And I'm assuming that if I'm going to leave the job, then somebody else will come to and take this position, and he probably will act missionary activity. And besides, I'm trying to discourage Jewish people from taking the course, and if they come, then I try to give them lower score to discourage them, and that's the way I'm trying to avoid them from converting to Christianity. That's my way. Like I told you, the conversation left a big impression on me, and right before I left, I asked him some more questions. And when I drove back home, he took me to the parking lot of the church, and I took my car. I drove back home, and as soon as I arrived home, then I picked up the phone again, and we continued with the discussion. And he told me, "You know what? What is your problem? You are an Israeli, and as an Israeli, you think that your country it's a very young country, and therefore, your country have 50 years of history, but and we have like 216 years of history." That's what he told me, or it was maybe even less. "Then you got to understand, your legacy didn't start 50 years ago. Your legacy started 4,000 years ago. Nobody really can teach you much. You didn't come here to study from us because you forgot your ancient identity, and your new identity took over your old one. Do not replace," he told me, "do not replace Avraham Avinu with David Ben Gurion, and do not replace Sarah Imenu with Golda Meir." That's what a gentle person told me. You get to understand, nobody can teach you much about spirituality. Go back to Jerusalem, live your own identity, live your own life, and keep the commands, and that's good for the entire world. I was in shock. He told me, he was trying to explain to me how my new identity as an Israeli, in the new time, kind of contradicting my old ancient identity, which is 4,000 years ago, and told me, "No, keep your old one, your old identity. You're a Jew before you were an Israeli. You got to understand, you have to follow the Torah." That was my first shock, and basically, it gave me a lot of material to think of. And I want you to know that since then, I decide not to go back no more to the church, because emotionally, I felt that that it's not only intellectually that I was able to find out that Christianity or the believers of the New Testament doesn't have any answers to the questions, but if you remember, because I made my own research and I had an argument over a year with the rabbis in upstate New York in Muncie, and with my brother-in-law, which was a priest that converted to Judaism, and then he came to argue with me in Muncie. And like I told you, I made my own research for a long time and came to a conclusion that all the prophecies in the Bible that Christianity claims to be fulfilled by Yeshu basically were out of context. And then by the lecture in the church, putting it to fill in, and by visiting and Dr. Michael, it was a little excitement, emotional excitement, that took me away even further from visiting the church. But still, back then, my wife used to go on her own, and sometimes I used to drive her to the church and then drive away. And she started to ask many questions. What's going on with you? What's happening to you? Basically, I was trying to call to Israel and to see whether my mother already knew. She knew that I was a missionary, and she was a Haredic woman already. She made a tshuva with her husband, and all my brothers were already Haredim. And it was I was the black sheep of the family, away from the family, and I was trying to renew my relationship with the family, because when I used to call and my mother used to hold the phone and not to answer me and to hang up on me, and I was trying to renew the relationship. After a few weeks, I was able to speak with my mother, and I told her, I promise you that I'm changing. I'm not exactly what you think I am. Something is happening to me, and I would like you to come over to the States and maybe visit me. And she told me, how come? How do you want me as a Haredic woman to come to the States and to be by your house when you don't keep kosher, when you don't keep Shabbat, when you're living with a Gentile woman claiming marriage, and how do you expect me to come with my husband and my two little daughters, which are your sisters? They're ready for Bet Yaakov. We keep Shabbat, we keep Torah. I told her, mother, you can do anything you want here. I can take all the dishes and out from my kitchen, and you can buy everything disposable, you know, chad pa'ami, plastic things, and we can. But what about your wife? No, I'm gonna send her travel. I can arrange something. And then she told me, we have to ask, has to ask Rav Shach, and she sent her husband to ask Rabbi Shach whether to fly to America, to Florida, to visit me. Her husband, which was already, his look already just like Eliyahu Hanavi, with his white beard and his pez and black yarmulke and a tzitzit outside, and he was looking like a Haredi. He made a tshuva, a big tshuva, and he used to basically study by Rabbi Shimshon Pinkus, which became his favorite rabbi, and he used to to go to his house, and Rabbi Shimshon Pinkus used to come to our house, and he was able even to convince my mother to put a cover on her head, not only for lighting the candles before Shabbat, but for always. And then so he became his chassidic of Rabbi Shimshon Pinkus. And when he asked Rabbi Shach, then Rabbi Shach told him to go to Har and fly to America. And he told to my mother, and my mother told me, okay, are you inviting us? Then are you going to purchase the ticket? And so I sent her the tickets to my little sisters and my mother and father, and they came to Miami. And when I saw them after so many years, and they seems to me like, you know, out of space. Were so religious with their look, and they saw me with the long hair, and when I took them with my car, driving from Miami to Fort Lauderdale, then on my way driving to Fort Lauderdale, and we were quiet. They have a long way, we're very tired, and then. All of a sudden, my sister, I turned on the radio, very light, very just to, and I heard Rod Stewart over the radio, and my little sister, that I barely know her, she told me, "Can you turn off the radio? I would like to sing a song." And then I told her, "Yes, okay, why not?" And I turned off the radio, and then she started to sing Shira Ma'alot, and all of a sudden my mother and father woke up. they started to respond to her Shira Ma'alot. Samachti ve'omrim li, samachti ve'omrim li, bet Hashem nelech, bet Hashem nelech. And I was, you know, amazed listening to Tehillim in the Hebrew words. I used to listen to a Tehillim over the media in a Baptist program in the TV, listening to it in English. But when I heard it in Hebrew, it's something much more deep that in your mother language, especially in the original language of King David. It was, you know, and I was listening to it from my own little sister and my father and mother responding to her in my car. I was thinking to myself, we're not driving to Jerusalem. It's not Bet Hashem. I'm not driving to Bet Hashem. No, it's not Yerushalayim. It's that we're standing before Fort Lauderdale. Oh, they're coming to my house. Oh, wow. It's not exactly the holiest place in the world, but thoughts came to my mind. And when we arrived home, they went to the kitchen. They put their stuff, and then they ran straight to the kitchen to grab everything they could in plastic bags, black, huge plastic bags, and to take them out of my house. They didn't want even to make them kosher. They just want to take everything, all the dishes, all the glasses. And they took everything to my car to throw to the garbage. It was a lot of dishes, a lot of, it was very expensive, I would say very huge expense. But it doesn't really matter for me. I want them to feel comfortable. I'm gonna purchase new ones after, and then we went to buy some other dishes, plastic ones, and then they prepare themselves for Shabbat. It was already a Thursday, and they prepare for Shabbat, and they, in Shabbat, they before Shabbat, they made a phone call to Israel to find out, in my location, where is a synagogue. I didn't even know where if there is any synagogue around me. And then they were able to find out where is a synagogue. And then we prepared the Shabbat in my house. Karin was not there. She went to Georgia to travel with her friends. And then I was able to arrange it where she was planning to go. And then I told my... And then I bought a ticket to that same place, the same time frame. And basically, we were sitting around the table, and my father started with Shalom Aleichem, Malachei HaShalom. And it was very, sentimental thing. Because I heard it when I was a child. I heard it from my father before he died. I heard it from my grandfather. He was a very old man after my father died. I was at the age of 10, 11. And all of a sudden to hear it, Malach Elyon, Malach Rachamim. It was very excited. My eyes start to be wet. I had tears in my eyes, and my mother saw me, and she didn't understand. She thought that I feel sorry because I cannot have my wife there, maybe. I don't know. But she gave me something to dry my eyes, and then she asked me, we didn't come to make you feel bad, we came to make you happy, we came to visit you, why are you tearing? And she didn't really understand. I couldn't really tell her exactly, but I was very excited to hear such a thing after so many years in my house. I saw the white map and the Shabbat and the candles and my parents around the table in my house in Fort Lauderdale in Florida. I was very excited, and it left a big impression on me, and I thought to myself, what happened to me that I'm so against it? How I become become a missionary. What happened that I rejected Judaism altogether? What's wrong with me? They have a nice family life. They're not harming anybody. They have a harmony in their family. It's a beauty of unity and nice holiness and spiritualism. And why I was so rejecting Judaism? Something probably is wrong with me. I live my life as a wolf in exile, living my life away from my nation, from my country, from my identity, betraying my father's and my grandfather's legacy. I felt a pain in my heart at that time. I couldn't really explain to anybody what exactly I'm feeling, but I was going through something very emotional. I couldn't really explain, even not to myself, what's going on inside me, but I felt that I'm in big trouble. Spiritually, I'm in a big trouble. On one hand, I love my wife. On the other hand, I would like to, and on that same hand, I would like to go on with my my dreams, and I'm flight instructor, and I'm able to manage a flying school soon, and on the other hand, and maybe go on with my studying. I already have my citizenship in America, and I have a private airplane, my own airplane. So, what's wrong with me? And on the other hand, I was starting to feel that I'm missing Israel and the lifestyle. Really, I was a soldier. I was an officer, but I never lived my life in Israel as a civilian, as a regular person, not a student, not a soldier or an officer, but as a regular Israeli that living his life in Israel. I've never experienced it, and I really far from what from the feeling of how the life in Tel Aviv or in Jerusalem will be like. But then I flew my father and mother with my own airplane over the beach, and I didn't realize that my mother, she have a height fear. She was fearing heights, and I was trying to maneuver, to do some maneuvers to show her what I know and what I don't know. But basically she was not curious about it. She just went on my airplane to fly with me to pray some more Tehillim in my cockpit, so something, a miracle, will take place and my soul will wake up. That's all. It was her purpose. I didn't know it back then, but years after, when I got married, then my mother told to my wife, I'm talking about the Israeli wife from a kibbutz that made a tshuva here in Israel, and nowadays I have 7 kids with her. So she made a big tshuva, and she left the kibbutz, and my mother told her that back then when she came to visit me, she didn't go and fly with me because she wanted to see Miami from up above and to see what I know about, what is my knowledge about flying and how, what kind of maneuvers I know and I don't. I was immature, I would say, and the definition of life was not exactly strong enough to really wake me up and see what important in life and what not important in life. But she knew what she was doing. She came to visit me to put some holiness in my house, in my mind, in my heart, in my cockpit, so it will increase my awareness to the Jewish legacy, and maybe something will, the lost child will come back home. And when they flew back home to Israel, I was left with a vacuum in my heart. And when my wife came back, then she started to realize a few changes in me, because I was really more curious about my own legacy. It was a new search, but emotional search, not only intellectual search, but it was something I was starting to go back and to search, to think, and we will